Sometimes I don't know how I'm gonna do it. Ahead there's a storm, I don't see a way through it. But I still believe that this too shall pass. If there's a ceiling, I'm breaking the glass. If there's a ceiling, I'm breaking the glass.
We're back with episode 5 of Our Time Now, the UK-based podcast aimed at over 60s, but at the same time, welcome to all that want to listen in wherever you are in the world. Some episodes are intended to give you information. Some are personal stories, some are meant as light-hearted entertainment, and some, like today, may be thought-provoking. They may even challenge your own views. Now, you can tell that today's subject matter is going to be a little contentious when I start by offering an apology in advance. So, I certainly don't mean to offend anyone, but if you do start to feel offended, please, can I ask you to listen all the way through? Because what might in the beginning sound as if it's against what you believe, it may end up not being that way at all. Okay, I've been through this conversation before and it's been described as a circular argument, meaning that it starts off with one viewpoint, moves to a different one, and then ends up back where we started. And where you stand on things, well, that all depends on where you start on that circle. Okay, here we go. Let's start off with a simple 50-50 choice. The planet that we live on, which we call the Earth. Let's say it was either created by God or by the Big Bang. Now, the circular argument is created when we start by choosing religious belief instead of science. Then we look at what we can actually prove, and we can't prove the existence of God. We can believe or have faith, but we can't prove his existence. So we say, oh, well, it must have been the Big Bang then, as we can prove through carbon dating that the Earth is around 4.5 billion years old. We've got fossils of extinct creatures and bones from dinosaurs. Yet dinosaurs don't get mentioned in the Bible. So religion must be wrong. Science wins. Or does it? My paternal grandmother was quite religious, yet my father wasn't. He was very much a man of science. But just to add another dimension to this conversation, my mother was a strong believer in spiritualism, ghosts and the afterlife. My father, being on the side of science, ridiculed the idea of spirits. I know it wasn't the main reason for their divorce, but it certainly didn't help their relationship. As a child, raised in a small village, I went to Sunday school. Mealtimes very rarely included my father, as he was always out doing something, so we did things mum's way. And that included saying a prayer before eating dinner and another prayer before going to sleep. We didn't go to church, apart from weddings, funerals and christenings, but I was raised to respect the church and the clergy. If you remember in a previous episode, I told you that growing up, I spent a lot of time on my own. And as a family, we didn't really discuss things. So when it came to the question of God versus science, I wasn't really pushed in either direction. And over time, as an adult, I formed my own ideas. If religion or faith gives us anything, it's hope. And that's important. In life, many people feel that they don't have control, and they're right. So the idea that there is someone or something that is looking over us is a source of comfort. When the worst of life presents itself and people are unable to do anything to help themselves, a belief in an unseen God is all they have. The problem for me as a teenager at school was learning about the Second World War and the extermination of 6 million Jews by the Nazis. 6 million people, men, women and children. I'll ask you something. Do you think that they prayed for help? Because I'm pretty sure that they did. You know, there's an old saying, there are no atheists on a sinking ship. When things are at their worst and there doesn't seem to be any hope, people always end up asking God to save them. And as a teenager with no one swaying me in any particular direction, I came to what I felt was a logical conclusion. If there really was a God, with 6 million believers pleading to be saved, he would have saved them, wouldn't he? But he didn't, because God doesn't exist. At least, that was my teenage assessment. But it's important to keep an open mind, because things and opinions can change over time, as they did for me. I'm one of life's eternal optimists. That means that whenever things are looking bleak, I've always had this one thought that pops into my head. A thought that says, I don't know how we're going to do it, but I'm sure things will be okay. And over the years, time and again, things have seemed to work out. And as I grew older, I realised the way my brain works is different to most people. I've said it before, but I really do think that being electrocuted when I was a small child, that might have had something to do with it. I've always loved reading all sorts of subjects, especially things that make me think. Sherlock Holmes mysteries, looking for an answer that isn't obvious. I read about something called quantum physics and ideas that are unusual. They have a famous theory called the Schrödinger's cat theory. If you haven't heard of it, well, it will definitely seem strange, but then that's quantum physics for you. Basically, what they suggest is an idea. Imagine a cat in a large box, and you can't see if the cat is alive or dead until you look in the box. Now, most people accept, well, it's one or the other. It's either dead or alive. But in quantum physics, though, they don't see it quite like that. They say tiny molecules can exist side by side, one with a positive charge, one with a negative charge. One being alive, one being dead. So inside the box, the cat is both alive and dead at the same time. And it's only when we look that one of those states becomes true. And they don't mean we find out so much as by looking, we make one of those things become true. You see, I told you it was an unusual concept. I then came across another interesting theory called the law of attraction. Imagine a blend of conventional science and quantum theories. You see, the human body can be measured scientifically. Heat, electricity, brainwaves. And with microscopes, we can study our blood cells. We can watch as a cut heals itself or bones grow. In my hypnotherapy studies and experiences, I was able to think of the brain and the mind as two separate things. The brain is a lump of organic matter which, over time, we've been able to map out. We've been able to hook patients up to electrodes and perform brain scans. We can actually see as different parts of the brain light up as it controls different functions. But when I talk of the mind, I'm not talking about body parts. I'm talking about our thoughts, feelings and emotions. It's true that those come from the physical brain, and people that have had damage to the frontal cortex often display acts of violence and aggression, particularly some famous serial killers. But whilst we can see increased brain activity on a computer monitor when someone is busily thinking, or slower activity when they're at rest, none of that can be defined as our soul. The mind can create things that it has never seen before. Imagination and random thought is so hard to pinpoint, just like faith or belief. And here's another example of how faith and science can cross over. And it was one of those moments when I began to consider that maybe things weren't quite what I had been led to believe. And the subject of all things is aeroplanes. My father was a pilot of small aircraft and he owned a series of small planes over the course of 20 years or so. And he had many books on the subject and I'd occasionally read one of them, especially the history of flight. Now, Leonardo da Vinci drew plans for an aeroplane in the 1400s and he had belief and faith that a man could fly like a bird. Yes, there'd been kites in China that had lifted men off the ground and hot air balloons like the Montgolfier brothers, of course. But the plane, well, that was something different. And people refused to believe him. They said he was wrong and he couldn't prove otherwise. It was 500 years later when the Wright brothers first flew, proving that Da Vinci had been correct all along. For 500 years, they couldn't prove him right, but we now know he was. And today, we can't prove God exists. But in 500 years, who knows? And science can now prove, with their advanced technology, that almost everything around us vibrates at a defined frequency, even things that appear to be perfectly still. You can go on Google and look that up. It is a scientific fact. You can sit in a room in complete silence, and yet that room is filled with radio signals. You can switch on a radio and tune into hundreds of different channels. That room is also full of other signals from television and mobile phones and countless other devices, without even talking about radiation and those from nature itself. We can't see them with the naked eye and we can't hear 99.9% of them, yet we know they are there and we can prove it. We can't see gravity, but we can prove that exists too. Right, let's take a quick pit stop just to keep up to date with the conversation. Firstly, let's look at God. Now, everything we know comes from books, scriptures or stone tablets written by humans. And those writings go back thousands of years. The Bible is said to document the life, death and rebirth of Jesus Christ, who, we are told, was the Son of God. But hundreds of thousands of years before Jesus, people talked about God or gods, mostly as a way to explain those things that they didn't understand. So that I don't annoy more people than I have to, let's just say Jesus did exist. The Bible talks about him performing miracles. The problem is that 2,000 years ago, people didn't understand many of the things that we do now, such as magnetism and electricity, for example. Something that the NHS now calls conversion disorder used to be known as hysterical blindness, and it's a mental health condition that can cause physical symptoms such as temporary blindness with no physical cause. You know, it's easy to see how the miracle of Jesus laying his hands on the blind man and suddenly restoring his sight might simply have been a change in the mental state. The blind man believed that Jesus, the Son of God, could cure him, and lo and behold, his sight returned, also known as faith healing. Now, I can't prove that the stories in the Bible are true, but equally, I can't prove that they're not. So let's just say that if Jesus did perform this act described as a miracle, then at that time, a miracle is what it would have appeared to be. Nowadays, we know that there is one possible explanation. Although without any evidence, we can't really say one way or the other. And evidence, that's the key. In a court of law, we tend to say innocent until proven guilty. So without evidence, nothing is proven to be true. In science, we perform tests. I believe gravity exists. I can test my theory by holding an object above the ground in my hand. I let go of the object and it drops downwards. And if I do that 100 times, then 100 times it falls to the floor Therefore, my theory becomes proof. But does that apply to all theories? Well, scientists would say yes if tested enough times. Ah, but what about things such as coincidences? You know, a lot of people say there are no coincidences in life. But have you ever sat thinking about someone and then out of the blue they phone you? Or you're walking down a street and you suddenly meet that person even though you haven't seen them for ages? I know that's happened to me. And it was things like that when I started to read about the law of attraction that made me sit up and take notice. My wife often has to go to the doctors and they have got a very small car park. If she drives there alone, she can never find a parking space. If I drive her, she always says, there's no point in trying to get parked in their car park as you won't find a space. And I always say, I bet I will. And I'm almost always right, much to her annoyance. So if I try to give you a basic starting point for the law of attraction, it's this. What you expect to happen will. But it's not always instant. There can be a time delay. As I read more about it, it came with a warning. The law of attraction doesn't care whether something is good or bad. Think of a magnet. It attracts another magnet to it. The magnets aren't good or bad. So think of your mind like a magnet. And the thing that you are thinking of, well, that's the other magnet. The problem comes when people think about what they don't want and it shows up. You know, if you're struggling with debt, you can't help thinking about it because it's a worry. The more you focus on the debt, the more you attract it. My wife thinks about the car park and expects it to be full, so it is. I expect to be able to get parked, so I do. The theory is the thing you focus on the most, you attract to you, good or bad. Do you know people that just seem to have all the luck? They seem to expect to have success, and they do. Do you also know people that live under a cloud? Nothing seems to go right for them. They say if they didn't have bad luck, they'd have no luck at all. Well, they're both examples of the law of attraction, and it's working perfectly for both of them. It's just that one person is expecting good things and one doesn't. There's a famous quotation by Henry Ford. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right. And here's the funny thing. There'll be people that don't believe in this. They'll say, oh, it's rubbish. It doesn't work. Oh, I knew it wouldn't work. And in their attempt to disprove it, they've actually confirmed it. I was talking to my best friend recently. We both had experienced the same thing. You have an idea. That's all it is, to begin with, just a thought. The more you think about it, the more you can picture it. You get excited about it. You talk about it and start making plans. And eventually, that thing that started as an idea in your mind becomes a reality. You imagine, you foresee how successful you will become. For us, my friend and I, we both made the same fatal mistake, really, with our businesses. We reached a point where we got comfortable and we weren't looking for more because we were quite happy with what we had. If you asked us, we'd say, yeah, life is good. I don't know what figure you have in your mind. It depends on your location and the type of business or how much you expect to earn. So for me, running a small local business, working pretty much part-time hours, that figure is around £1,000 a week. If I get a certain number of customers and do a certain amount of work, my profit is around £1,000, sometimes a little less, often a little more. Every now and then I have a bump a week and it's £2,000, but my expectation is around £1,000 a week. Maybe I'm attracting a certain set of circumstances that delivers that amount of money. And if I focused on having a regular 3,000 a week, I'd probably find more customers would phone me. So it's my own doing. But forget about money for now. What about happiness and health, love, fulfillment? Do you look forwards to each day, expecting it to be great? Because if you don't, that's probably why you're not getting it. Yes, things can go wrong along the way, but you know, when life puts a hurdle in front of you, you can either stop or climb over it. Around 4 years ago, I saw an advert online about becoming a property developer. And I'm an ex-bricklayer and I've got building trade experience, so it interested me. I got in touch with the guy that was selling a course. Now, to cut an already long story a bit shorter, after checking it out, I signed up. It was an in-person 3-day course with ongoing support. Due to my previous time off work with bowel cancer, I no longer had any savings. But he explained that developers don't use their own money to build houses. They get specialist, what they call development finance. And they build the house, they sell it, they pay off that finance and they keep the profit. Sounded good. The only problem was you usually had to buy a plot of land to get started. Although he did say we could always try and find someone with money but no experience and do a joint venture. So I did the training and I started looking for a plot, tried to find a business partner, and I met a few people, but I got let down several times. And then I was rushed into hospital and almost died from a strangulated hernia. And it took some time to recuperate. And I think I lost focus and just concentrated on my existing business for a while. I was back in my comfort zone, as they say. But after a while, I saw some people that had done what I had planned to do. They had built a house in 6 months, made a £100,000 profit, and it got me fired up again. So I got involved in some online study, started to become quite knowledgeable about a new building method, and thought about finding a business partner. Now, the guy that ran the 3-day course, well, he's a very genuine, helpful person. So I recommended a manufacturer to him. And he asked me if I could arrange an introduction for him, which I did. He said he was going to be running a special training day. So it was arranged for the sales director of that company to go there. And I was invited to go along as a guest, just to say thank you. Now, the people attending that training day, it was a very special day, and they all paid a lot of money to be there. So I was just an invited guest. I decided to sit at the back of the room. But Andy, the property trainer, he said I should sit with the others. So I did. And he pointed to an empty seat at a table near the front. The conversation changed to this new system that I was now very familiar with, and it wasn't long before people in the group were asking me questions, which I answered. Sitting next to me were two sisters. They had some rental properties and an Airbnb house. They even had a place out in the Bahamas, very nice. Later that night, I received a message from one of them. They asked me if I was interested in becoming their business partner. They had money to buy a plot of land and some contingency funds, but they've got no actual building experience. So a random invitation to attend the special day as a guest, then sitting in a chair next to them with them looking for a business partner, that seemed a strange coincidence. It was unusual for me to be invited. I was busy and almost didn't go, but at the last minute I changed my mind and I did go. I could have sat anywhere in the room. There were probably 30 people there that day, but the empty chair was next to them. And now we are indeed partners. We've just bought our first plot of land and intend to build several houses and bungalows over the next couple of years. I was focused on finding a business partner with money. They were focused on finding a business partner with experience. Two magnets attracting to each other. Cool, huh? If you think about it, when people pray, they're focusing on God. As a kid, my idea of God was an old guy with a long white beard dressed in robes, floating above us in the clouds. Then as a teenager, it was more like the God from the movies, a ball of white light that could send a bolt of lightning to destroy his enemies. And it was for that reason that I told myself he didn't exist. There was no bolt of lightning to save the 6 million, no help from an all-powerful God. But what if God isn't like that? What if God is actually the power behind that thing that I've described as the law of attraction? A power that is inside each and every one of us. Maybe the question shouldn't have been, why didn't he save them? Instead, why didn't we? The world knew what was happening. And yes, the war was ended, but not soon enough. Today around the world, people are dying from disease and starvation. Yet we focus on making money, driving flashy cars, taking holidays in exotic places, getting plastic surgery for our vanity or to impress people that we don't even know. We're told God is everywhere, all at once, all seeing, all knowing. And over time, a theory formed in my mind, based partly on science and partly on theology. Albert Einstein was an incredible thinker. His scientific theories are well known, in particular, the law of conservation of energy, which states, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, only converted from one form of energy to another. I said earlier, we can see and measure the energy in a living body, heat and electricity. And when we die, that energy leaves our body. So where does it go? As a hypnotherapist, I've helped people to deal with the grief of losing a loved one. To give a simplified explanation, I get them to imagine a bright red bus travelling along a road that is familiar to them. They're all things that they can see in their mind. They can see their loved one sitting on a bus, smiling happily as they look out of the window, free from any pain or discomfort that they may have had in life, because pain is a physical phenomenon. The bus stops and they get off. They climb a staircase leading upwards, and as they do, it becomes harder to see them. Their energy surrounds them in a soft, warm glow. The bus, representing their body, their human form, that moves off and disappears from view, because the person that we loved was not the physical shape, but the soul inside them. It was their energy, their love and compassion, their strength, humour, or any number of virtues that made them who they were. That's what I get them to see, moving upwards to the peace and beauty of what we think of as heaven. And Einstein suggested, and science has proven repeatedly, the energy cannot be destroyed, only converted from one form of energy to another, so they never truly die. And here's a comforting thought. Energy attracts energy, like for like. If, when we die, our energy, or your soul if you prefer, if that's attracted towards us, is it so strange to occasionally feel that presence? There's nothing scary or sinister in it. If we loved that person and they loved us, why can't we close our eyes and focus on them and feel that love surrounding us? Religious books tell us that in death, we are reunited with our loved ones waiting for us. Granted, that may be difficult to understand or accept for us in this time. And thousands of years ago, people didn't understand things that we do today. So a way to explain it to them was, there is a person called God, a place called heaven for good people, and a place called hell for bad people. And heaven is love and warmth and peace. Hell is misery, fear, and regret. So be good. And here are 10 commandments to help you. Follow those and you'll be fine. My mum was a big believer in the spiritual world, and growing up I met a lot of her spiritualist friends, and I'm going to have to be honest here. They were a collection of delusional wannabes that used mediumship as a way to make themselves seem important. Does that mean that everyone is a phony? Well, no, I don't think it does. I honestly believe that some people do have the ability to tune in to the frequency of energy. Animals, especially dogs, seem to be able to tell a good person from a bad one. Back to science, we know that dogs can detect sounds and smells that we can't. They're used to detect everything from cancer to drugs to bombs to buried bodies. If energy leaves a dead body and remains close to the family, who can say that a dog can't detect it? Energy has a frequency. Frequency waves disrupt the air, which is how sound is transmitted, by moving the air. And a dog's hearing is 4 times better than a human. And I think a small number of people can detect things that others can't. I've used the term tuning in because of a couple of things that I experienced whilst running my hypnotherapy business. And I'll just say it right now, I'm not saying I am a medium or anything like that. I'm just going to tell you what happened. Without mentioning any personal details, I'll tell you about a young lady that I helped. She came to me for help with emetophobia, and that's an issue with seeing people being sick. Of course, nobody likes seeing it. In fact, just seeing someone throw up can cause the same in other people. But emetophobia, that's on a different level. Phobias can control people and ruin their lives. She was a young mum, and the issue was affecting not just her, but her 3-year-old daughter. You see, the lady herself wouldn't go out at weekends in case someone was drunk in the streets and she might see it. So her and her husband almost never went out. And she couldn't allow her daughter to go to birthday parties like the other kids because she was terrified of little children eating too much party food, running around and being sick. So her daughter was missing out. When she came to me, she was accompanied by her mother. As was usual, we started by talking about the issue to see what first triggered it. Except both her and her mum told me they had absolutely no idea. They'd talked about it often, but neither had a clue. So, couldn't help me. I then started the hypnotherapy session. She closed her eyes, we did controlled breathing, listening to my voice as I got to relaxation stages. Now, most sessions went the same way. They're in a hypnotic state and I'm just guiding them through it. But a couple of times I experienced something strange. My hand would be freezing cold, but only one hand, not both. I had a weird fuzzy sensation in my head, a bit hard to describe really, but I guess it's a bit like when you're really tired, except I wasn't and I felt fine. I allowed my mind to wander and I described what I was seeing and I started to picture things. I saw her sitting cross-legged on a polished wooden floor. She was really young, maybe 5 or 6, reception year age or first year of primary school. Suddenly she blurted out, "Oh my God, I remember. I was at school in the big hall assembly, sitting on the parquet wooden floor, and there was a girl sitting near me and she was sick. I don't know, maybe she had a tummy bug or something. Anyway, she leant forwards and threw up and it splashed onto my book. And I had this, oh yeah, it was a pastel blue exercise book. It was my first ever school book and I was really proud of it. How on earth could you have known that that's where it all started?" She and her mum were so excited. A mystery going back decades had been solved by somebody who wasn't there didn't see it, and hadn't been given any clues. How? Then there was the lady that came to see me for help with her drink problem. It was actually her husband that booked her in, and he drove her to her appointment with me, although I never actually met him. Now, I can skip the details of her session, apart from one part. The fact that at one point she stood up quite angrily and claimed that she was being set up by me and her husband. And it took a couple of minutes to calm her down and regain her trust. The reason she reacted was all down to her home. She was married to a wealthy businessman, and their home apparently was set back from the road by about 150 yards, surrounded by tall trees. Well, as part of the session, I started talking about a beautiful home, surrounded by tall conifers, unseen from passing traffic, with a long gravel driveway that had a small stream running alongside. The home had a double gabled frontage of glass and oak beams with heavy studded oak doors, like you see on churches. And inside it was grey marble flooring in the entrance lobby with a pair of matching animal sculptures. I had accurately described every detail inside and out, and she said the only way I could have known is if I had actually been there, maybe by invitation from her husband, as they lived about 10 miles away. So she thought I'd been there and we were plotting against her. Is it possible that my mind connected with both of these people on some frequency? It's as if I could see through their eyes, even when one of them had a blocked memory. Another thought I've had is, if Einstein was right when he said that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, it would follow then that when a child is born, an existing energy moves into it. An age-old question is, why are we here? What is the purpose of life? As an ex-IT instructor and computer specialist, I've used computer programs that compute and compile data. You set the system up, you switch it on, and you leave it to run, and it goes through every possible combination to build a huge database. What if we are part of one big experiment? We are born, we live a lifetime, which may be short, may be long. We have unique experiences, we interact with others, we win, we lose, we learn, we die. Our spirit, soul, energy, life force, call it what you will, leaves our physical body and is attracted towards all of the other energies that are not contained in a body. This mass of energies connect, and that data is shared or downloaded. We would call that a collective consciousness, a living, learning entity. Could that collective intelligence, all-seeing and all-knowing, be God? Each new life contains a seed of energy. You've no doubt heard people say that we are all God's children. I've often wondered about deja vu. You know, when you see something and you recognise it, but it's actually the first time, as far as we're aware. Does our energy retain little bits of memories from before? Many religions believe in reincarnation. If energy isn't created and it doesn't die, then logically it must be recycled. Every energy living over and over again. A bit like when people had VHS videotapes and you'd put something on there and then you'd wipe it and then record over the top. And occasionally, part of the old TV program or whatever would just creep through. Is that why we can meet someone new and feel as if we've known them for years. Or, conversely, take an instant dislike to someone. Maybe in a previous life our energy met their energy, and as two humans, there was a problem between them. Okay, so we're now in the realms of things that we cannot prove, like the existence of God. And that's why faith and belief are so important. If we want to believe, we have to accept that our perception of God may be different than the way we imagined. History books and holy books were written by people, not God. We know how a story told to one person can end up being significantly altered when passed on by several people. It's often referred to as Chinese whispers. So even if an event did happen, it may have been interpreted differently over time, especially through the centuries, when superstitions and folklore were used to explain the then unexplained. Maybe you've already decided that I'm talking rubbish because it doesn't align with your beliefs. The problem is, millions of believers have based their opinions on the words written in just one book. That opinion is reinforced by holy men that are held in high regard, yet they too are relying on the words from that one same book. Amazing that those people refuse to question the truth from just one source. Add a different religion, a different holy book with different morals, different stories, different laws and teachings, and we can see how religious wars have caused so much bloodshed as believers on both sides fight to protect their viewpoint. What I'm suggesting is simply an alternative explanation. As we go through life, we often have to change our once held opinions due to new information. In earlier times, we made water pipes to bring fresh water into our homes instead of pumping it from a well. It was considered the right way to do things. Then we found out that those lead pipes were actually poisoning people. At one time, doctors would often be smoking a cigarette while seeing a patient. Old film footage shows patients in hospital beds puffing away to pass the time. Now we know we were wrong to be doing that. We have to be willing to accept that what we believed in the past may have been wrong. All this time, God may have been a natural phenomenon, just like gravity, unseen but 100% real. Neither good or bad, yet for those that believe and focus, completely dependable. Think of the words that we say. We declare God is good, and then we describe natural disasters such as earthquakes and tornadoes that kill hundreds of innocent people as an act of God. Now then, give me some leeway here, and just for now, accept that the law of attraction is real and it works 100% of the time and anyone can use it. Do you think the rich, the elite, want everyone knowing about it and using it? We have a system in this world. Most of the wealth is owned by a small minority, the bosses. And they need the majority of people to work in their factories or businesses, accepting a relatively small wage so that they can keep making those big profits and stay rich. So the law of attraction has been kept a secret for a long time and shared by just a few. Looking back through history, we can read quotes from successful people that seemed to know this law, like the one I quoted from Henry Ford. But it's also been acknowledged by those of a more spiritual, philanthropic nature. Monks would spend time in silent prayer or meditation because they knew that the way to harness this great power was to focus without distraction. And the elite, well, they also know the secret. they knew that if they could keep the masses distracted, they could keep the control. And a television set was created. So a worker would come home at the end of the day, switch on the TV set and be distracted. Even better, you could advertise merchandise to them, convince them they want and need these products. And how could they get those things? Keep on working for the boss and spend your wages. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. That is not a coincidence. It's by design. People become conditioned. They are shown a version of life and told that success is hard to achieve and it's not for them, so don't even try. They should keep their heads down, nose to the grindstone, and in 50 or 60 years, they can retire and finally have time for themselves. Like a shepherd herding his flock, when one starts to break away, they're brought back into the fold. If one distraction stops working, they find another. And if all else fails, start a war. Divide and conquer. Turn one group against another, whether it's politics, race, social class or religion. And we're back at the beginning. Some will believe in science and some in God, as if the two are separate and opposing. But it only takes a small shift in our understanding, and both can coexist and be true. And there you have it at your disposal. It's for you to decide what to do with it. As Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way you're right. You'll be pleased to hear the next episode will be a much lighter tone, including a virtual tour, this time of my hometown, the birthplace of slave trade abolitionists, social reformers, famous writers, and stars of the stage and screen. So until next time, thanks for joining me. Feel free to recommend that a friend tunes in, and have a wonderful week ahead. Thank you.